Our regional economy is a mix of businesses old and new, all with a common thread. Someone had an idea and pursued that idea all the way up to opening the doors on a new business. We visit with entrepreneurs and sometimes the descendants of entrepreneurs in our monthly business segment, The Ground Floor. This month, we visit with the founder and the chief financial officer of Blackstone Publishing, which began with a focus on audiobooks many years ago. The Black and Blackstone is Craig Black, the founder of the company. Craig, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
Heather Johnson is the CFO, chief financial officer of Blackstone, in the studio with us as well. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you.
So, Craig, let's start with you and the origin story. Were audiobooks big at that time in history, or getting big? I mean, what was it that made you decide this was the way to go?
No, they were not big at all. There were two companies in existence, books on tape and recorded books, and none of my friends except one knew about them, so they were not well known at all.
And so what made you decide to go this way?
Well, I was having kind of a late-in-life renaissance. Late-in-life meaning I was like about 28, 29 years old.
Felt late, right?
And realizing that I had just missed my education. I went to Arizona State to play baseball. The day that I left the baseball team is the day I left school. I didn't learn it much at all. I didn't even buy books my last semester. And then 5 years later – 8 years later, whatever, I've just realized, oh my goodness, I love learning. I want to learn things, but I didn't have any time. So I started, I had a job where I was driving all over the United States looking for new store locations, and I started doing things in my car that I shouldn't be doing, like reading little snippets of things and memorizing poetry and what have you. And
was it with actual books in your hand?
Well, no, not really. I usually would take a Xerox copy and just kind of flash it up. And mind you, I didn't do this going at 60 miles an hour. I did it going at 10 or 15 miles an hour on mostly on LA freeways.
Uh-huh.
I got into three fender benders. And so I became the joke of the cocktail part, the cocktail party bully bait, you might say. And so at one party, I remember a friend came up to me with a box of tapes, cassette tapes, and it was George Orwell's 1984 on tape. And he gave it to me, and that changed everything.
And you said, whoa.
I had this false idea that everybody that's driving in cars on freeways would just have their life changed and would be eager to buy this product. So that's when the germ for the idea to start the business originated.
And so you really started Blackstone Publishing in your garage in Ashland?
Yes.
And what? How did you get started? I mean, how did you get the rights to the first book? How did you line up somebody to read it? All that stuff.
Well, it was a long process. I started writing letters to a number of publishers. Didn't get a lot of responses, but I got a couple. And so it was enough that there was one from a company called Regnery Gateway out of Washington, D.C. They said, you could publish anything we have. They weren't doing bestsellers. And so I grabbed like 10 of their titles and we went to work. And I auditioned many, many people from the OSF who came by.
Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And got them to read their stuff. And then so – but at this point, you were still dealing with the cassette tapes? Is that right?
Yeah, we were doing cassette tapes up until about 1994. In fact, we probably continued cassette tapes until 98. But I'm just saying we started digitizing in about 94, 95. But yeah, we were doing cassettes well into the 90s, late 90s.
So from the garage in Ashland, Heather Johnson, give us an idea of the size of the company now.
Sure. So we're just under 200 employees, and we have locations in New York and Portland. We have remote workers throughout the United States. We've grown. I started with the company in 2010, and the staff size has grown, maybe not extreme, probably about 50 people, but the company itself and the business has grown five times over since I started. So we definitely are on a growth trend, I think, not only because of our own acquisitions, but also just the audience in general for audiobooks.
Right.
So, Craig Black, have you been buffered somewhat? I mean, the old joke that we love to tell about the publishing industry here is that the second book off of Gutenberg's press after the Bible was a book about the demise of the publishing industry. So obviously, it's been really hard on print books through a lot of the history of print books. Have you been buffered from that somewhat because you do audiobooks primarily?
Yeah, I think audiobooks is right now, it's probably the sexiest part of the whole publishing industry, and we're really well positioned for that. So yeah, I'd say we are very fortunate timing-wise that audio has taken off as it has, and we can thank our friends at Amazon for that.
Oh, okay. So did Amazon really help launch you into the
I had a hard time saying friends because I do like them a lot because we would be nowhere near where we are today without Amazon, but we do compete against them as well.
Mm-hmm. So how has the business changed over the years? Because you actually put out print titles now as well?
Yeah, we do. How many years ago, Heather, was it that we started print titles?
About three years ago.
Yeah, we found that there's all kinds of consolidation going on in the industry right now. And the battle to obtain rights is intensifying. And we found that probably the best way to get really good authors is to go ahead and try to get them for all rights, print rights, ebook rights, even film rights now.
That way they're not having to split it between different
publishing houses. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it has changed a lot.
So talk about delivery then. You started as books on tape. You mentioned you kept cassettes into the mid-90s or late 90s, but moved to CD. And then what are you now in this age of podcasts and instant downloads and all that stuff?
Well, we're primarily – most of our product is sold as downloads, direct downloads through our site, downpour.com, which is a great website, as well as Audible and audiobooks.com and a number of others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, throughout the world.
Yeah, throughout the world. Even libraries are doing downloads, so it's the way to go. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. This is The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange, our segment on entrepreneurs and area businesses. And this time we're talking to the folks at Blackstone Publishing. Craig Black founded Blackstone Publishing in his garage in Ashland. Heather Johnson is the chief financial officer. If you have questions or comments for our guests, join in. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it sounds like a fairly challenging landscape, Heather Johnson, just to try to figure out where people are going to want to get their stuff. And in this age where so many more people are doing podcasts, for example, as well, I mean, shorter bits that aren't book length, you know, little half-hour shows and one-hour shows, you have a lot of stuff to try to fit into the middle of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's challenging to make sure that you're in as many of those arenas as you can be, but it's also, our market, the people that are listening is just constantly growing. So even though you've got podcasts and other things that are digitally available, people still want to find that book. And most of them aren't available through free sources like that. So, I every day I talk to somebody new that says, oh yeah, you know, I've switched to audiobooks because it's easier for me to get it in while I'm driving or working out or whatever, you know, their idle time before. So, I think it's just making sure our sales team is amazing. They're out there finding every way that we can be out there available to our readers. It's a challenge, but we've been keeping up and on top.
Craig Black, you talked about how you realized you wanted to get educated. You loved learning. And so what have been some of the toughest lessons learned about doing what you're doing along the way?
Well, I mean, the first thing I learned the first year of operation was that there aren't a lot of people like me as far as people who are just so eager to redeem their time in the car. I mean, most people want to be entertained. And now I would say probably most of our customers want entertainment. Mm-hmm. So there was a wrong premise to start with that a lot of people really wanted to. I had been reading biographies by people like Teddy Roosevelt, who used to read while he was waiting for his carriage, and Thomas Jefferson, who would read at the dinner table, even though there were guests there. So I guess that those people inspired me. I thought, okay, the way to really get ahead is to use every available piece of your time mm-hmm. wisely. And that's not the case with most people.
Did you have a bunch of titles that were more like educational stuff at the beginning?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, for the first, three or four years that probably all really serious stuff. In fact, the New Yorker magazine wrote an article. They were kind of astonished by the stuff that I was choosing. And they said that I paid no concessions to marketing wisdom, which I took as an underhanded compliment. Because we had done like Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire and Shelby Foote's three-volume History of the Civil War and stuff like that, rather than the popular novels that Books on Tape was focusing on.
How many discs in those days did it take, or tapes did it take, to do Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire?
I think that was probably 105 or 108 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot.
Wow, that's a bunch. So were there moments when you thought, either because of changing tastes or changing delivery methods or the advent of the internet, was there a time when it was like, oh, wow, we're dead?
No, I don't think – well, let me back up. Every year at the running of the Kentucky Derby, for the first 5 years, I revised my resume thinking that I was going to have to go out and get work because cash flow was so bad. But other than that, we'd always come out of it the next month. And other than that, there was never a time where I thought we would die except for when we sold our company to a group of British investors. And then we had a traumatic experience 10 months down the road.
And did you buy it back?
Yes. When I say that we sold the company, we sold most of the company. We didn't sell all of it. So we still had our involvement in it. But yeah, 10 months later, we found out that it was on the verge of bankruptcy. They were running it into the ground. They were misreporting financial figures. The board of directors hired a forensic attorney, and they dug into it and found out that the numbers that we were seeing were not real numbers. So, yeah, it was a traumatic experience.
Had you been paid already, though? Had you been
paid? Well, we'd been paid a good chunk, but not all of it. I was not very wise. I decided to give them like 50% of what we sold it to them for as a loan, and they were going to pay us a high interest rate on that loan. So.
Heather Johnson, is this just before you were hired? I'm thinking.
Before I was hired. Yeah. I think I'd been there maybe just a little over a year when this came about, and so I really I'd never been through an M&A acquisition type of situation ever, and so I really had to learn a lot. But it was when I look back on it, it was such an educational experience because I remember the things they were asking me to do and the questions they were asking were textbook examples of things I learned in my accounting classes of what not to do, red flags everywhere. And so I just remember coming to Craig and Josh and just saying, listen, you know, this doesn't look right. There's something wrong here. We need to really ask some more questions. And this, of course, was after the actual purchase. So when everything started going downhill, it was very obvious what was happening. And we were just really lucky to be in a spot where they offered it back to Craig and Michelle to purchase the company back.
So you didn't have to do a hostile takeover of your old company.
No. Mm-hmm. But it was a very dramatic time because the Royal Bank of Scotland was the big loser in the game. Mm-hmm. And they were not in a very good mood. As the English would say, they were in a foul mood.
So, and how long ago did all this finally settle out and you ended up with full control of the
company?
Well,
everything really started coming to the surface in September of 2013, and we bought it back, I think, by October 8th of 2013.
Wow.
But the last 8 days were extremely intense, all-nighters. Yeah. Many of them were all-nighters.
Yeah.
Wow. And so so has the company – Heather, you mentioned the company's grown pretty much fivefold since you've been there in 9 years. So it sounds like the general trend since that time has been pretty well upward.
Yes. We benefited because we got one big jump. When we bought the company back, they had folded their audiobook – their U.S. audiobook operation into ours. Formerly, it was called BBC Audio. Mm-hmm. The BBC owned it, but these guys bought it from BBC. So we got that rolled into our company, which was pretty nice.
So you got a bigger company back.
Yeah.
Did it end up a wash financially, or were you out a few million dollars?
Oh, no. We did pretty well.
Yeah.
We did pretty well.
We came out on top, for sure.
Grab your headphones because, oops, no, he got off the line. It was Carter Wolf Creek was just talking about the inability to flip back and have that option in a physical book. I wonder if you can help people who are still struggling with the concept of audiobooks understand some of the features that you have now.
The features of
audiobooks now, yeah.
So being able to flip back and like to a different place. Well, you know, I think the apps that are available for downloads are amazing now. So you can definitely bookmark pieces in the book as you're going and go back to those anytime that you want. If you don't do that, it's a little bit harder to find your place, of course, but you can, you know, rewind and fast forward just like anything, you know, any other recording. There's a lot of sophisticated apps now where you can make notes, you can share with friends, you can do all kinds of things that you could do with a regular book. So,
is there a particular work over the years, Craig Black, that you're proudest of, a particular volume, you know, tome, you know, Count of Monte Cristo or something that you got onto, audiobook?
That's a great question. And I should have come prepared for that, but I didn't. I would say probably I've mentioned Shelby Foote's three-volume History of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. I probably am most proud of that because we didn't have the money to record that. I had to really scramble. I went to my grandfather, who was kind of my mentor at the time, and he was willing to produce it for us. So we had it done, and then I got a letter from Shelby Foote right after that, just praising us up and down about how what a high quality it was. And then about 6 months after that, the Ken Burns thing came out, and it just lifted us.
Oh, so really, even though your thing was out in advance of Ken Burns, it just gave a chance to really
It was
accelerate.
Good timing. Yeah.
Wow.
It was great.
So who you mentioned Oregon Shakespeare Festival actors being among your original people to read the books. Who does the reading? Who are the voices now?
Who do we use from Shakespeare now?
Or is it just, I mean, is it just Shakespeare figures?
No, it's not just. I would say, you know, we use some people from off-season, you know, that want to come read for us, but our narrator pool is huge. So we have a casting director. I mentioned we have an office in New York and we have studios there. A lot of the narrators are doing home production now. So they record in their garages or their wherever they've built a studio. And they can even do some of the editing themselves. So really our narrator cast is, you know, countrywide at this point. But we do have Shakespeare tie-in and we definitely we rotate some people throughout when they're available as well. We've also done some recordings of plays. So each year for the last, gosh, I think 6 years now, we've done we've brought one of the plays in from the festival and done a multicast recording.
So you get
those.
The actors into the studio
right.
with you instead of doing
right.
it on the stage. Yeah. Wow. Right. Okay. So you have to do some annotations and directions reading.
They're fun to watch. Yeah. I can tell you, I'm definitely not the studio person, but I love to just watch through the little window.
Yeah. So just a few seconds left, Craig Black. What's the next horizon? Do you have your eye on what the next development might be that'll force you to flex in a new direction at Blackstone Publishing?
I don't know about a new direction. I think what we're going to do is just amp up everything. We're going to amp up our audio publishing. We're doing about 1,200 titles this year. I think that's going to continue to go up 10-15% a year. Mm-hmm. And then certainly print titles, mm-hmm. way up. And we're going to be, we found at this year's Book Expo that we're attracting a lot of big name authors, mm-hmm. and I think that's going to continue to happen. And so watch for publicity on that.
All right. So from fender benders on the LA freeways to an Ashland garage in 1987 right. to just under 200 employees today, this is the story of Blackstone Publishing. Craig Black is the founder and Heather Johnson is the chief financial officer. Thank you both for joining us for this month's edition of
Thank
The Ground
you.
Floor.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks.